Hi, everybody. Nice to see so many faces that haven't changed a bit in 19 years. It's also an emotional time, so if I get emotional, then you understand that this was a beautiful community that I was part of and loved. It's nice to have my daughter and her husband and my granddaughter here. She was married in this church while I was your minister here. And of course, to have Evelyn, my wife of almost a year now, with us again. So come with me into the woods and leave behind your oughts and shoulds. I'll introduce some friends of mine, an ironwood, a beech, a pine, an old oak tree with a hollow base, a cottontail's safe hiding place, a maple with a lightning scar that stretches still to touch a star, while on the ground its broken limb supports new life as fungi home. Come watch a slug sipping ironwood gum turn pale orange from sweet sap scum, and thrill with squirrels that leap and race up trees and down in hide and chase. Come hear the songs of chickadees while woodpeckers rap on hollow trees. Come breathe spiced air fresh from a tree with scents of toothwort, bloodroot, trout lily. Come walk these woods into, not through. Come to listen, to learn, not do. Let go of time and task and goal, and let this walking heal your soul. Today is the last day of Arbor Week. So this is a day to celebrate trees. And because of some of the practices that I have developed over the last few years of my life, I was asked to come and share some of my spiritual journey with you as I walk amongst the trees and learn and live and am fed by the forests that surround us. So how did I get here? I retired 19 years ago. And that seems like a long time, but in other ways it seems like just yesterday. And when I retired, I got busy at the things that all retired people do, trying to find ways to stay busy, to be helpful or useful in whatever ways you can, and to somehow hope that we still matter. And so I did that for a year. I took all the information I'd been gathering over many years as a hobby about family trees, and I put it together in a book so that my children and my grandchildren and extended family would know something about where we came from. And then, because my wife Mary was still working full-time, I opened up a private practice again and became a psychotherapist with an office here in Cambridge and an office in Kitchener. At the same time, because my spiritual journey was still going on and I was still growing and seeking and curious about what this mysterious word God meant, I enrolled in a 5-year program with a Sufi master and expert in the teachings of Jesus as they might have been understood by the Aramaic speaking people who he delivered that message to. I enrolled in that course and took programs and read and wrote articles and things over the 5-year period. And when I came back, having graduated from that program, I started a meditation group and taught people how to dance the Lord's Prayer. And when the community that Mary and I were part of Was without a minister. I filled in that position for a short time while I looked for somebody new, and that ended up being 4 years. And then we decided to retire together, Mary and I, and we began to live that life that all retired people hope for, which was to be elders to our family, to be busy at hiking and traveling and going to the theater and enjoying the fellowship of the church that we were part of at that time. And generally speaking, living a pretty good life. And it was a good life. Until it wasn't. Because, of course, Mary got sick and she died. And then a part of me died too. And I no longer really had much to do other than to sell a house, move into an apartment all by myself, and COVID hit. And so, like many of the other people who lived alone, we were really alone. And I was really alone, except for a dog. A dog who insisted on taking me for a walk every day. And took me for a walk, because we couldn't be where people were, a walk in the woods. And so we walked in all the beautiful parks and forests and woods that we are truly blessed with here in the Cambridge area. And if you haven't been out in some of those woods recently, you need to go out. You can even go out in wheelchairs, because there are some of them that have paved trails. So they're not inaccessible to anybody. And while I was walking with the dog and avoiding people, including my family who lived here, I heard about a program. And of course, it was just toward the end of COVID, and that program was a program for forest therapy guides. Of course, I never had heard of forest therapy, didn't know anything about forest guiding. And I thought, well, the only place that I'm feeling connected with anything here is in the forests. And I'm intrigued with the idea that what's happening to me in the forest is that I'm not only connecting to trees and flowers and plants and some of the birds and animals that are there and feeling like I'm with somebody, but there's something deeper happening. I'm connected to something deeper within my own life and within this cosmos that we're all part of. And so I took a program called Forest Therapy, and after an intensive in-presence program and 8 months of training and reading and writing articles and sitting in the woods for long periods of times and befriending a personal tree that is my tree called Teresa, I became a certified forest therapy guide. Intriguingly, learning how to be a forest therapy guide is about learning how to slow down. And the day I was notified that I was certified to be a forest therapy guide, I was just beginning a trip with my daughter to Machu Picchu, a hike of 4 days, and it should have been 8 days. So for a forest therapy guide who's trying to learn how to slow down in the woods, I was taking what was essentially a marathon walk with a destination in mind in a hurry. And so I came home, became a forest therapy guide, started taking people out on walks, learned how to be in the forest, not just walk through it, learned how to recognize the forest for what it was, a living, breathing life force in our world. So what did I learn in the forest? Well, Shinrin Yuko, which is forest bathing, translates better in English because it conjures up ideas of people out in the in the forest taking baths, and that's not really what it's bathing in the aura and the atmosphere of a forest is what the Japanese mean by that, and they really resurrected that. But we call it forest immersion therapy or forest therapy. And it even is now a way that doctors are learning to prescribe, rather than prescribe medicine to people, they're prescribing a park pass. There are certain provinces in Canada where doctors can prescribe a forest or a park pass to you, and that's your pass to go and spend time in the forest. So what did I learn? There's some science to this, and so we'll, if we turn to the next slide. One of the things I learned is that when you walk into a forest, you very often feel that the air is different. Have you noticed that? When you walk into a forest, the air is different because all those trees and plants are giving off phytoncides, which are basically forest medicines. A lot of the medicines that we use as human beings come from original medicines that came from the forests. And we've learned that those trees are giving off that medicine for each other. One tree will signal that it's being attacked by a certain kind of insect or a certain kind of virus. And the other trees who have the medicine that counters that will actually start producing it once they get the signal from the tree that's being attacked, first of all. And those phytoncides are not just there for the trees, but for all the other beings that are part of that forest. And that's why a forest with a varied kind of vegetation is a healthier forest, because those phytoncides are there. And we often, those of you who've ever done anything like aromatherapy, that's another version of what is happening naturally to us in the forest. I also learned that research shows that when people listen to nature sounds, their heart rate goes down, their blood pressure goes down, their heart rate variability is increased, and they're able to live a healthier life. They're able to function better and focus better just from the sounds. That's the next slide, by the way. Yeah, there we are, nature sounds. Then I learned about fractals, or those patterns of life that of nature that happen at the microcosmic level and the macrocosmic level. This picture is a picture on the one side of a tree, the tree canopy. On the other side, that's a human lung. And they're the same pattern. And human beings are hardwired to recognize in our world patterns of nature that are similar, and they have ways of signaling to us that help to rebalance the functions within our bodies in ways that we don't have any control over. It just happens naturally. Some researchers are talking about a thing called vitamin G, which means vitamin ground or earth. And it's that thing that happens, and gardeners know about this. When you get your hands in the earth and you touch the earth and you begin to touch and be part of the earth around you, it actually rebalances the electromagnetic systems within you yourself, and all the rhythms and functions of your body begin to come back into balance. Some researchers are now talking about a thing called nature deficit disorder, which is something that has happened within our society and is really one of the reasons why the Japanese got so involved and really became the experts in forest therapy, because they were concerned about how many people were dying of stress-related diseases in their society. And their research showed them that it was because people were actually had a deficiency of nature. And we found that people who have ADD, attention deficit disorder, find that they can focus better, they can function better when they have spent some time in nature. We also know that people who are struggling with illnesses often find that the natural autoimmune system of the body is triggered by time spent in nature. If you spend 3 hours in the forest, your autoimmune system is increased by about 50%, so that that effect lasts for about 7 days. If you spend a whole weekend in the forest, that autoimmune system increase lasts for about a month. We are, as natural evolved beings, forest creatures. And being in the forest is one of the ways that we come home. A quote that I like: we lost connection with the earth and sun and moon and stars, and then we constructed roofs and walls to meet with God. We traded in our deep, intimate relationship with nature for bricks and mortar. We have left our first love. We search for the divine in books and buildings, unaware that the universe calls our name through the rustling of the leaves, woos our hearts in the quietude of a starlit sky, and rolls infinity upon our feet through the tides of the sea. So part of being a forest therapy guide and being a practitioner of forest therapy is learning not just what a forest has to offer, which is important, but also knowing how to let that happen to you. And so the magic of being in a forest and letting a forest be a place of spiritual growth and development and power is to learn a number of very simple ways of being there. And one is sensory awareness. Learning how not to just be there with your head, but to be there with your eyes and your nose and your ears and your fingers and your feet touching things, and even tasting the things that are there in the forest, to increase your sensory awareness. Another important perspective is an animistic perspective. I don't go into a forest anymore and think that I'm just seeing trees. I'm seeing that tree and that tree, and each one of them is a living being in its own right. The ant that's crawling up that branch isn't just an ant. It's a soul just like me, with its own life, its own creative purpose from God, same as me. And it has just as much purpose and life and spirit as I do. So looking at things with an animistic perspective is a way of seeing the forest as a community of beings and as a community in its own right, of which I am a part and only one of the many more than human beings who are also in that forest with me. I also learned how to do it in a relaxed pace. That's my dog, who died a couple of years ago, but my dog who saved me, really, because he taught me how to walk at a smell's pace, not at the rushed pace that I thought human beings were supposed to walk at, and not to get a certain distance and a certain amount of time, as I was taught was a good thing for physical fitness, but rather to walk in a way that allowed me to see and experience what was around, not just what, but who. An inquisitive attitude is also an essential part of forest therapy. Learning how to explore, not just, oh yeah, there's a nice bunch of trilliums, but to go and look at a single trillium in that bunch of trilliums, and to explore how it's maybe different from the one right beside it. To look deeper and see underneath the trilliums what else might be growing, what else might be there, just waiting for me to introduce myself to it. And then part of forest therapy experiences, of course, having other people with whom you share what you've been experiencing, because in the articulation of it, in the saying of it, in the talking about it, is sometimes how you learn what it was that just happened to you. Trying to tell somebody else about it often makes it more real for you. So what do I want to do for you with you this morning at this point, as I almost am finished, is I want to help you experience something that I have made a regular part of my daily life. It's a way that I have learned to express within myself what I call the prayer of the trees, or a greet the morning or greet the day kind of experience. And it's called a body prayer. Body prayer is a part of meditative prayer, very much a part of the kind of praying that was done by our ancestors throughout history. Not so much a part of our mentally oriented societies and prayer practices, but nevertheless one that I would like to introduce and have you experience with me today. And it involves a number of things. The first thing is learning how to breathe the four kinds of breath. There are four elemental breaths. There's an air breath, which is to breathe in through your mouth and out through your mouth. And air breath is a way of opening yourself up to receive that which is new and different and full of change. So when you breathe in through your mouth and out through your mouth, you are also letting yourself be open to newness. And so let's try that all together. One breath in and one breath out just through your mouth. You can probably think of times in your life when something is so astonishingly beautiful that you go, that's an air breath. That's the God of surprises. Then there's a fire breath. That's breathing in through your mouth and then, like a dragon, breathing out through your nose. So let's do that together. That's the breath of determination, of passion. That's the fire breath that is the fire in the belly that needs to get something done, that has want and desire to it. Third breath is water breath. And the water breath is in through the mouth, or in through the nose, and out through the mouth. So let's try that together. In through the nose and out through the mouth. Just like you are a fountain breathing out the water. Okay. And that's the flexibility. That's the ask for things to level out and even and to take the shape of what they need to take in any given moment, to be able to adapt, to be there where I need to be present at any given moment. And then the final breath, the final element is earth. And earth breath is in through the nose and out through the nose. The steady, stable, dependable being there, faithful part of me. So in our breathing through this prayer, what I want you to do is to do an air breath, then the next breath is a fire breath, the next breath is a water breath, and the next breath is an earth breath. So there'll be four different breaths for each movement. Now the movements that I'm using actually are an adaptation from some movements that one of your congregants, Steve Jennings, gave to me years ago when I was a minister here and I used to have back problems. And they started off as back exercises, and then evolved naturally into a kind of a prayer set of movements. And those prayer movements are Very simple. And so you're going to have to stand for this part and give yourself a little bit of room. Stand if you're able. You're all allowed to sit because you're not going to move your legs. It's just your arms are going to move anyway. So if you can't stand, you can still move your arms. The first one is to bring your arms up and really reach. Imagine a tree that is trying to get up where the sun is so that it can receive from the sun. If you think of the Lord's Prayer, this is the part of the first two lines of the Lord's Prayer. Acknowledging the God who is beyond everything and asking that God to be a holy presence within yourself. That's what that really prayer is asking you to do. And then you bring your arms up, and then you'll bring your arm down on one side. Keep that one up. It's still looking for sun. This one is trying to bring that energy down as far as it can into you. Then bring it up, receive some more, and you go down to the other side, okay? Some of you may be too close to each other and you're banging heads, but you can, okay. So that's the first exercise, and we'll do that so it'll be twice or each side, but that's four times. And there's a breath with each one that's different. The next exercise is to bring your arms up, because the next part of the Lord's Prayer, if you think about it, is about acknowledging the energy of the divine that comes from all around us. So we move our arms as far around as we can. And then back to the center, pick up some more energy and go the other way as far as you can. And then back. That's the energy that's all around us. And then the third part is the energy that comes from our relationships when we get them right. And so that's the part of the Lord's Prayer that has to do with daily bread, forgiveness of self and others, asking not to be distracted by all the temptations and the evil that we could get ourselves into if we didn't try to stay correct. And that's to go back up, take that energy in, and then in whatever way you can, get that energy right down to the earth. If it's just the seat in front of you, that's far enough, it's okay. Just touch something that gets you in contact with the earth. So that's and then the fourth one is the part of the doxology of the Lord's Prayer that has to do with all of that being the power and the glory forever and ever. You know, the kingdom, the power, and the glory, right? The kingdom, the power, and the glory, or if you like, the standard by which I know that I'm on track, the energy to make it happen, and the harmony that comes when it all becomes one sense of oneness. And that is really coming up to a circle and then bringing that circle down into myself and making it central in me. Okay? So that's how the prayer is going to work out. We're going to use Pachelbel's canon as the music for this. And so the way this works in Pachelbel's canon, the first time through, we're just getting the breaths together, so the four breaths. And then the second time, we will begin to put the movements with it, okay? Thank you. you know what trees feel like when they pray. So today, I saw God. The river, mirror glass smooth, flowed south with an eastward bend, guarded by trees with bush-flowered skirts, symmetrically reflected in its stillness, while the warming sun shone down and a river's sun shone up. Evidence of water's current, the barely perceptible procession of leaves over its surface. Then, a flash of movement, quick as an eye blink, shattered its tranquility. A leap of splashing water rippled out circles in all directions, distorting trees and sky reflections. In less than a minute, the river returned to mirror smooth. But in that holy moment, I glimpsed a parallel universe, a depth full of beings, life, and energy. Beneath the river's mirrored reflection, my surface-focused eyes were opened to other worlds and other dimensions. And today I saw God.